Oh, we're recording this, I'll make sure not to flub up too much. Some of you know me already, so you'll know that I'm not really the best with PowerPoint type slides, so forgive the fact that they're going to be somewhat stale. So, the C Lion Compiler is a very interesting movement in open source compilers, and it's gotten a lot of traction now with Apple and previously, so I'm going to talk about some of the exciting things that are there and what makes the Clang or C Lion Compiler particularly exciting for a developer. So hopefully there are some developers in this audience. Raise your hands, developers. Excellent, so I won't be going over too many people's heads. Everyone can hear me all right, right?
A little louder.
A little louder?
Yeah.
Is that good?
What?
What? Okay, so just quick about me, some of you don't know me. Yes, I do spell my name in all capitals for the first name, and if you can figure it out, then you program way too much open source. Used to do physics, now I do software. I've become a zealot for C++ in particular. I work on file systems and stuff, and I've been using FreeBSD since 2003 and been hacking on it since at least 2006. I currently work for a storage software provider, so I'm pretty deep into this stuff. So what is Clang? Well, okay, it is a verb meaning to make a large metallic sound, but I don't think we care about that, do we? It's a free and open source C, C++, Objective-C, and Objective-C++ compiler that is available under BSD-friendly licensing terms. And this is going to become important through the talk because there's a lot of licensing movements afoot in the open source community. Some of you have heard of the GPL-V3 that's coming out and is out from Hebrew Software Foundation. And there's a lot of hubbub about it, and not everyone likes it, and it's going to be causing a bigger stir as years go by. So Clang's highlights, as we said, it's a BSD-friendly license. It's in an MIT style. It's compatible with GCC's command line options and with the extensions to the C family of languages, which makes it very, very useful as a drop-in replacement for GCC. You can just plug it in and go. I can hear some people are excited already. It was written from scratch. It's not tied to any earlier open-source compilers or closed-source compilers, and it's written entirely in C++, which is an interesting advancement in the compiler world because most compilers for C are still written in C, and most compilers for C++ are actually written in C, which is somewhat disturbing because there are very few self-hosted C++ compilers out there. It's very easily portable to many architectures. In fact, in many respects, it's much easier to port than GCC. It just requires a little bit of a learning curve, but it's supposedly very easy to port. It has a lot of awesome features for developers, and when I get to the second half of the talk, we'll actually demo some of them if I can get it to work for you guys on the projector with my other laptop. And the awesome part, but I didn't get to prepare enough for it today, so we won't be looking at it, is a static analyzer for C and C++ code, which is really awesome. If you guys don't know what static analysis is, I really suggest you look into it as developers. It's something that pretty much every software shop should be using these days. It's a great way to ensure stability and security in your code. So, another compiler. I mean, seriously, do we need another one? Some of you might have seen this XKCD cartoon. Everyone's complaining that there's too much stuff out there, so we'll make another one to bring it all together, and then we have yet another one. But the truth is, I think we really do need another compiler, and we really shouldn't just stay with GCC. For one, as I said at the beginning, it's not BSD licensed. The last versions without GPL V3 are now over 2 years old, and they pretty much stopped releasing patches for it, which is going to be a problem for projects that don't want to stay with GPL V3. And the GCC code base is 20 or 25 years old. It goes back to 1985. It's probably older than some of the people in this room. And the internals are actually, if you've ever looked at it, a horrible mess. The hackers on the GCC compiler at Apple have been very upset with the way it is, and to quote one of them, it's not really a lot of fun to make the hippo dance. So I hope that sums it up, and I get a fever. Wonderful. It's aging design and the generally bizarre internal structure. It's caused many, many bugs to be left unattended for years, particularly when it comes to some of the quirkier bits of warnings and error messages and sometimes even miscompiled code. There's one particular bug I've been waiting for 3 years for a fix, as I said. It's a weird corner case with no return value on warnings, and I have some code that keeps getting flagged by it, but the fact is it's not, and even one of the best static analyzers on the planet, the one from Coverity,
says it's not a problem, but it keeps bringing up warnings in our build, and it's pissing us off. It's also been joked somewhat, but kind of not really, that it's a lesson in how not to write a compiler. There's a number of conspiracy theories out there, maybe this was done so that no one would actually steal the compiler and close it up and stuff, but I'm not really going to get into this, but it's not a great example of how to write a compiler. There are better open source compilers out there, but unfortunately they don't really live up to what GCC has been giving us for the past 20 years. Until recently, it was the only viable compiler for modern software at a system level for a whole large project rather than fun toys that was going to be written in C and C++-like languages. But it's incredibly difficult to make it up to date. Its internal structure makes it hard to expand to the new standards for the languages coming out of C++OX. Some of you might have heard of this. And even the new C standard that's supposed to be coming out, it's supposed to be 2011, but it's probably going to be, I bet, 2015 or later because standards always slip. And as these languages grow new features, it's getting harder and harder for GCC to continue to tack on the implementations of them. That's not going to get better, it's only going to get worse. And the fact is, GCC doesn't integrate well with most modern IDE environments. It also doesn't support a lot of interesting optimization techniques, including, and I know it sounds strange for a static language like C and C++, JIT, just-in-time compiling of your binaries dynamic in core to attempt to get better optimizations. And this kind of gets to the history of Clang. But I mentioned the license, and people say, oh, yeah, license. But license is actually very, very important. As an open source developer, you probably don't care, but a lot of us in here aren't only open source developers. We have day jobs, and that means we work for someone paying us to write code, and that means they want to sell that code to someone else. And if they are under a license that prohibits them from actually selling that code, they're not going to be able to use that particular tool you want to use, and that limits their market and limits their ability to basically pay you so you can continue to develop open source in your spare time. And the fact is, there are licenses out there that don't let you legally sell your object code from the output of the compiler. Additionally, a lot of us don't like the GPL because it's a very large and hard to understand license. It's some ungodly number of pages with all these definitions and legalese, and it really does take a lawyer or a legal department to sort that out and deal with all of the implications. So if you're a developer who writes code for sale, and sometimes you release some of your sources, but not all of them. Like Apple, they release the sources to the core OS based on FreeBSD and NetBSD, their Darwin OS, but they don't release the higher level graphical toolkits and such. And what if you're writing code for a platform which is open source? There's a lot of commercial developers out there that develop for Linux or some BSD or even now OpenSolaris and such. And the fact is that on those systems, sometimes the only compiler you have available is GCC, and that's going to become a problem too. So, in FreeBSD, which is where we're really getting excited about Clang, we have a kind of unique licensing situation in the open source world compared to things like Linux or OpenSolaris. The BSDs, especially FreeBSD, have to meet these requirements. We're an open source system project, and part of the appeal is that it's free and it's open and it's customizable like Linux or pretty much anything else you get that's open. But we also aim to support commercial vendors. In fact, a lot of our developers have their day job at commercial vendors, and they got that job by being FreeBSD developers. This sort of synergistic hybridization going on here. And we provide the implementation code to them and say, basically, go do what you want. Make a modification and close it up, and we don't really care. And a lot of the bug fixes that make it into FreeBSD come back from these vendors. And so these vendors have bits that they don't want to manage. Maybe there's a bug in awk, for instance, or a bug in sed, or whatever it might be. They don't really care to manage that. It's not part of their core competency, so they're just going to push that back to the community. But some of it, like, for instance, Isilon, they may have a particular bit on their file systems that they don't want to really push out because that's their core stuff, and it integrates tightly and deeply in the kernel, and they have to do a lot of plumbing. They don't want to be forced to release that under a license, and the compiler is coming into that picture with GPL3. FreeBSD Foundation gives us a lot of business support by interfacing with the businesses, and we even go through the effort of isolating impure, non-BSD compatible bits of the tree in subdirectories so you can strip that off, replace it, and wind up with a clean tree. As a result, we can't put that GPLv3 code on the tree because it severely hampers the vendors, and that's going to destroy the nice community we've built. And so, since there are vendors avoiding GPL3 compilers, we have to do something. We've known for years this is coming, because the vendors that we work with have been very, very hesitant. So there were a few efforts to move away from GCC. In 2008, I remember attending around here an NYCBSDCon presentation, as I said, about PCC. Now, who remembers that presentation? Who was there? Okay, so I thought it was a very exciting presentation at the time. I don't know if the rest of you thought so. And it was an intriguing idea that would help solve the problem, but it had some limitations. First and foremost, PCC is even older than GCC. PCC goes back to the 1970s when Stephen Johnson was working on a portable compiler as an experiment from Bell Labs. And it worked, and it was very highly portable, but that code hasn't seen the light of day for the past 10 or 15 years. It was retired, actually. But the OpenBSD project became particularly excited about it, and they began to strip all of the C++ code from the code base, and they were trying to cater to a C-only compiler that would expand their options. And that was a good idea for them, at least. And we did have in PCC a fully functional, reliable, portable compiler, but as I said, it's covered in a thick layer of dust, a thick layer of rust. It's just very old. They ported it to i386 and AMD64, and it was generating some reasonable code, but it needed to be brought up to date. It wasn't C89 compliant. It wasn't even C99 aware, and it didn't have support for a lot of stuff that's coming out even in the C language. But there was another fun little historical irony that PCC used to be the default Unix compiler back in the 1970s and the 80s, and it even shipped with the BSD system up to 4.4 BSD in 1994, so it was kind of like coming back home, and I'm sure that appealed to a lot of the long-time users. And other BSD projects have bandied about ideas like implementing their own compiler, or contracting someone to write it, but as an operating system project, do you really want to take on another task? I mean, look at what it's done to the FSF. They've taken on the task of writing a compiler and a kernel. I'm still wondering what happened to the Herd kernel. I heard it works. Has anyone here tried it? Okay, that makes none of you.
You heard it works. Is that an intentional thing?
Maybe it was. I'll leave that up to you. And so at the time, back in 2008, the open source landscape for compilers was really disappointing. And this concerned a lot of people, and thinking back on it actually concerned me. I just never put it into words.
Question?
Yes, sir.
On the two previous slides, you mentioned the vendors. Can you just name some of the vendors that FreeBSD is working with that are relevant?
Oh, sure. A lot of them are fairly well known, and they do show up. The ones that are fairly public knowledge, Yahoo has been known to work with us. Isilon, IX Systems, Juniper makes a modified version of the previous DOS for their products. I believe NetApp is still working with us. Google has a lot of interest in us. Okay. Just a few. Yes.
That would include Bluecoat.
Bluecoat? I wasn't aware of them. Thank you.
Citrix.
And Citrix, yes. I've forgotten. There's a long list, but I'm just giving some of the bigger names out there. And particularly, if I didn't mention it, Apple. And there's a weird relationship between Apple and the rest of the BSD community because they give a lot back, but they kind of got burned a while back when they left their CBS repositories pretty much openly accessible. They got a lawsuit against them because of a commit message in there that said, oh, we know it's still broken, and someone actually filed a lawsuit against Apple based upon that message. And
ooh.
Yeah, and so Apple just was like, all right, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to close up. And now they're very hesitant to give bits back. And it's kind of sad because they've done a lot of interesting work, some of which we do want to take back. I actually participated in a project in 2006 to write an auto mounter because Apple wasn't willing to give us theirs, which they wouldn't really care about. And this was pretty close to the time of that lawsuit anyway. So we did that one, right? Yeah. So
Apple's auto mounter is nothing to write home about.
What's that?
Apple's
it's
auto
not.
Mounter is nothing to write home about.
It's not.
It's better.
Yeah, exactly, and that was why I gave up my project too. I was working with Eric, the current maintainer of Auto Mountain. That's a whole other story I'd be happy to get into when we get to questions if anyone's curious about it. So the landscape for compilers back then, before Clang, around 2005 to 2007, really limited. GCC dated back to 1985, and it was originally a C rewrite of a Pascal compiler that was somehow hacked into compiling C code, and it's a really weird story for that one. But that's the GCC that we use today, and does anyone remember in the late 90s the EGCS fork and all that hullabaloo?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that was the thing about GNU is they were very, very tight on controlling what went into the compiler. They since loosened up, and that was good. There's OpenWATCOM, which kind of really only supported DOS. Yeah, but it hadn't been ported to Unix like OS's, and it was a C++ compiler. But once again, it goes back to the 80s and the 90s, and you know, it was very heavily hacked, and it was just the core compiler, which was an interesting idea. There was the Borland compiler, which was a similar situation, but was even less focused on. It was really mostly C with some C++ extensions. There was LCC, which was a lightweight C compiler. If anyone remembers the book, and I have a copy of it, A Portable Retargetable C Compiler, that's actually the compiler that's described in the book. And a curious anecdote is, if any of you played the game Quake 3, and I think I've played with at least one person in this room that game, parts of Quake 3, their virtual machine, are implemented using the LCC compiler. There's PCC, as I mentioned, and it shipped with BSD until 1994. Then we switched to GCC, I think it was 1.2 or something, I don't remember, don't quote me on that. And then there was TinyCC, which is another one like LCC, and there's a few others like MWCC and stuff. Most of these were C-only compilers and were very lightweight, but the curious thing about TinyCC, it did begin life as a winning entry in the International Obfuscated C Code Contest. But it's not an obfuscated code anymore. The original author cleaned it up. But I thought that was a pretty cute anecdote there.
It so also doesn't produce usable binaries on any BSD I've tried for anything other than a trivial case like Hello World.
Yeah, I've downloaded and played with all these compilers for Hello World up to like what's your name sort of list, but I haven't tried them for large industrial things. And I don't think most of them were really up to the task on BSDs of doing that kind of work, with the exception of GCC. So it's in a very tight bind with this license deadline pending and everything else. And this gets to a philosophy I've always had. Competition among open source projects is a good thing. Let's look where we have competition. We have competition among kernels. You have Linux, various BSD kernels. You have React OS, you have L4, you have mock-based kernels. You even got, so I've heard, you've got competition among shells. You've got your bash shell, your corn shell, your TCSH shell, and a bunch of other weird shells that people try. You've got scripting languages, Lua and Python and Perl and whatnot. And in desktop environments, we've got GNOME and KDE and WindowMaker and FBWM. We've got a whole host of others. And there's a lot of options there, and they're all very good. Emulators, I've got a list there. Even editors, you've got Vim, an impossibly hard editor to use, but you love it once you use it. Emacs, which I've heard is an editor, but I've only used it for mail. And Pico and Nano and a bunch of other editors too. And even aging C compilers that kind of barely work, sort of. GCC and TCC and PCC and LCC and a bunch of these others. And even mail servers, sendmail, qmail, and whatnot. But where did we lack competition? X11 servers, and we kind of still do, and that I think is a problem. The XORG fork was a nice thing, but it seems like X386 is dead these days. And then there's whole C and C++ compilers that are capable of compiling whole systems and being used for industrial projects. And if you look, the projects in the third list all provide great experiences. Some people have preferences for one or the other, but they're all relatively robust and stable and heavily used, and they have a following because they work. These, in the second category, we just use them because we don't really have an alternative. And that creates kind of stagnation. So we've come to Clang and LLVM. It started as a research project, as many open source projects tend to do. And in 2000, the students at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, a couple of them began researching and applying dynamic compilation techniques, things like just-in-time compiling, partial bytecode implementations and such, on compiled languages. LLVM, which is at the core of the Clang project, was the fruit of this labor. It was intended to be a replacement for the back end of GCC and use GCC as a front end. And it did work very successfully in the early 2000s at this end. It was open source in 2003, and Apple started using it in 2005 for the platforms that they had. They used it to great effect with the iPhone, and they used it actually in a really cool way to do graphics card optimization. Regardless of the graphics card you had, they would detect on the fly what you had and what you didn't, and they would re-dynamically compile parts of the graphics engine to run on your CPU when you didn't have GPU backing for certain operations, which was a really, really neat development. and it would even adapt to whatever instructions were most efficient on your CPU, so I heard. I haven't looked too much into that, but there was a lot of great potential there. And Clang had some other great stuff, too. Clang came about because, as I said, Apple's developers on the compiler were very frustrated with GCC's internals. And so they struck out and made their own compiler and used LLVM in the back end. They released it as open source in mid-2007, and it was not very complete at that time, but it did look promising to a couple of key people. At that time, a project was started among FreeBSD developers to get FreeBSD to compile using Clang, and in early 2009, they were successful at getting a FreeBSD kernel to compile using Clang. And now, since 2010, Clang is now fully self-hosting, and it's incorporated into the FreeBSD source tree. If you check out from the FreeBSD source tree right now, head, and you do a make build world, you're going to build two compilers. You're going to build GCC 4.2 with the latest patches, which are now over a year old, and a fairly recent snapshot of the Clang compiler. Both compilers will be built, and only one of them will be used to build the whole system, which by default is the GCC. There's a way to change it to use Clang, and in fact, the laptop that I do most of my daily work on, I track current. Yeah, it's kind of silly, but I like doing it. I like living on the edge. And it's been building with Clang for about the past 16 months or so since I found out you could do that, and I've had relatively good success with it. Occasionally, Clang has a weird goof and doesn't compile something right, but usually it's the code that's at fault. There's something very unorthodox going on that's actually undefined behavior that GCC just kind of forgives you for. And it does have a little trouble chewing on some of the harder ports, but I have gotten large parts of the ports free to build. Recently I was playing with Vim built entirely from the ground up using Clang, and it didn't give me any issues. So I think this is pretty much the beginning of the end for us using GCC, and I think the FreeBSD developers and CommitBit people actually agree. So Clang on FreeBSD. When FreeBSD 9 is released later this year or early next year, whenever we actually decide to do it, it's going to ship with Clang and LLVM fully operational and installed on the system. You can just type Clang and it's going to be there. If you get the binary install CD, it will just be there. And you can make one change to fcmake.com and you'll be building your whole system with Clang. Now you'll still build the ports with GCC because there are some problems with it yet, but it's soon going to be the default compiler. As I said, the source is in the tree for GCC, and for GNU, they've stopped releasing the patches for that branch for almost a year, and any new patches are probably going to be GPLv3. So that's a dead-end code base. That's something a project can't live with. If the project wants to stay vibrant, it has to keep tracking upstream vendors' code and keep incorporating the latest bits. One of the biggest setbacks of not keeping the compiler up to date and staying with the 4.x line, even with patches, is that as new processor architectures come out, Core i5, Core i7, FreeBSD can't leverage the optimizations for those architectures because the newest versions of the compiler have the optimization backends to handle those instructions and handle those new timings, but the older ones don't. So you wind up with code that's compatible but not necessarily as optimal as it could be. And that's going to become a bigger problem until you leverage those instructions properly. And that's all done behind the scenes of the compiler, but you have to have the support for it. The existing code in the treaty causes Clang to issue a lot of warnings. Now, these are pretty much benign warnings, but if you do build it, you'll see lots of warning messages scrolling by. And it's actually very easy to spot a Clang warning message compared to a GCC one, and you'll see that when I get a little later in the talk. This is one of my favorite features about Clang. Most of those warnings, as I said, are poor programming style. Sometimes it's an assignment in an if statement where the programmer didn't put parentheses, and it's not a problem, but the convention these days is to put parentheses in a certain spot to help express intent, and Clang is sufficiently picky enough to actually say, you should really do this, because if you don't, your code is going to be just harder to read. And it's being embraced and supported by Apple and Google now and a whole bunch more. So this does represent the first real viable alternative to GCC in the compiler mind space for open source projects. So let's compare Clang to GCC on a sort of feature-by-feature basis. Clang, as I mentioned, from the top down, from the front end all the way down to the LLVM back end, which handles opcodes and linking objects and stuff. It's kind of like a partial bin util replacement. It's all in C++, and it's actually based like a library API. If you don't understand what I mean by that, does anyone here use Subversion? Okay, we got a couple. And I'm sure before that you probably used CVS, right? Right. And if you've used both of them, they kind of have pretty much the same interface. You give it the same commands and such, and the output's mostly the same. But what a lot of people aren't aware of with Subversion is each of those commands is really just a small C function that calls into an API that does the command. So you could write very easily a GUI framework or IDE integration, or even a back-end daemon that does some kind of analysis of your code and checks out the latest version and puts it into a static analyzer without having to go and issue a shell command from your code. You just call into a library function, which is a lot tighter integration. Clang is built in much the same way. All of its internals are accessible as a library function, and you can do partial compilation. And this really was useful to Apple in order to get their Xcode IDE product to do some of the things that Microsoft's Visual C++ does, like iterative compiles. You change one line and it already has the binary compiled for you if you didn't make a mistake. And hopefully they'll be able to get that even to the point of, well, you're running a debug image, you've crashed, you can step back a few instructions, load in some new changes, and it will patch the running program and continue without a flaw. Microsoft has some interesting and amazing work in this area, and it would be nice to get this in the open source community via something like Clang. Its C++ 98 and 03 implementation is way more standards compliant than GCC's. Particularly GCC has some problems with dependent name lookups and two-level name resolution and some of the other weirder edge cases of C++ when it comes to dealing with nested type defs and templates and some of those other quirky things. If you're not familiar with that, you're not a C++ developer, you don't really have to worry about it, but it's a good thing when a compiler is standards compliant. Both of them don't support the export keyword, but that's not really a problem because I only know of one compiler that ever did, and it's not the Microsoft one. It was one that was descended from OpenWacom, and even they have been getting rid of it because it was an intellectual dead end. And the standards committee said, that was a mistake, we shouldn't have done that, we're deprecating it. So that's not really a hindrance that it doesn't support that, and pretty much no one expected to be supported after 2004 or so. Fact is, GCC currently generates more optimal code, sometimes by as much as 10% in most circumstances, but the nice thing is that the Clang compiler compiles the code faster to come within 90% of GCC's efficiency or more, and the compiler itself is very streamlined in the way that it works, and new optimizations are being played with all the time. And if you look inside GCC, it's a horrible beast of its implementation layer for optimizations, and that is a big problem for people at Apple, and that's why they went to Clang, because there's a lot of experimental optimizations that really just get plugged in as library functions and executors, which is really cool. Clang's internal architecture for compiling code will track your line of code all the way from parsing and lexing out to binary output for your object, which is really useful for delivering proper error messages and generating good debug images, both for when the compiler screws up and for when your program isn't written correctly. GCC supports a currently larger subset of the C++ OS extensions. Clang will be supporting them, but right now they're focusing on getting some of their unit tests to be shining clean and perfect on C++. They're good, but they want to get better. Both projects intend to be C++ OS compliant soon, and the standard's not even out yet, so it's not that horrible. Some other... Big part? There was a draft out last I heard. I didn't think the committee had approved it. Was it ratified?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm behind. I take that back. If it's being ratified, has it been sent to ISO yet, or it's still in the ANSI track?
It's being ratified by the conference
or something. Okay. That's news to me. GCC still relies on an unusual and unique internal build process. If you've ever hacked on GCC. It's got these weird things where C files will get stuff tacked onto them from scripts that are embedded in make files and some other very unorthodox things. And so this makes it very brittle, and if you don't know how the developers of GCC were thinking at the time, you can wind up shooting yourself in multiple body parts simultaneously. At the moment, they're switching to a new, I guess you could call it, language for implementing their code called C++, which they intend to be a limited subset of C++ features that they approve as acceptable to interact with mostly old-fashioned C code. I think they have some worry about things like exceptions and winding up with resource leaks, which is
scary.
What's that?
It's scary.
What's scary?
They're developing that for that purpose.
Well, they're not developing C++. They just said, we're going to make this particular subset of C++ and we're going to bless that and call it C++. So they're not developing it for that purpose. They're just saying, we're comfortable using these. And you know, they're not the only project that's been saying, maybe we should switch from C to C++. And this is, I think you're going to see more of this grow, because C is not a bad language, but it's just not, it's not well-tuned for developing large software projects as quickly as C++ is. And I think you're going to see a growing generation of coders embrace more advanced features in their system implementation language. They both support most relevant architectures today, i386, AMD64, PowerPC, and ARM. GCC supports way more architectures than I care to name, and it would have taken up five slides to do a list of them, but I'm sure we know how portable GCC is. But it's actually, according to people who write compiler reports at least, and have written for both, much easier to port Clang to a new architecture than it is for GCC. It's mostly just a matter of writing some little C++ virtual functions for an extension of a class and a little config file, and then you're done, so I hear. Don't quote me on that, but that's what I hear. The LLVM backend does support multiple input frontends for other languages, kind of like GCC's bin utils do, and it's callable as a library. So you can use the LLVM backend with its wonderful optimization opportunities and such with other languages. I believe there's a Python frontend now. There is a Haskell frontend, if that interests you. And there's some others that are coming along, and they have shown some good work. And it's nice because it lets you link object files written in one language and another, and it makes you more productive if you embrace that kind of development. The Optimizer framework supports many more advanced optimization techniques than GCC, including, like I said, just-in-time dynamic recompiling techniques like you get with Java's JVM and stuff. GCC, most of their optimization layer is a bunch of, well, this particular function had the code from this point, so let's go call a function over here that we just wrote and see if this applies, whereas, and so it's mostly just a bunch of hacks tacked on, whereas in Clang and LLVM, optimizations were planned from the start, and unlike GCC, which just kind of transforms the parse tree and every optimization function gives you back a digested form of the parse tree, which is reduced, Clang tracks along the parse tree and just marks parts of it as invalid and not needed as it optimizes stuff out. And this is useful when it comes to error code generation, because as GCC loses its context, its error messages can become far more baffling. So it's awesome error handling, which I keep hinting at. Chris Latner, who's the original author of both LLVM and Clang, along with another student at University of Illinois, he said in a particular blog entry, Clang aims to go above and beyond the call of duty to provide really amazing error experience. And he said that regarding Clang's error and warning features. And I'm inclined to agree after using it myself for a lot of projects for the past year. I believe a compiler should aid in fixing problems, but shouldn't expect and should expect a competent programmer to be providing input. It's not the job to hold your hand all the way through and say, you know, this is how you use this keyword and this is how this works. But it should be somewhat forgiving and say, hey, Dukas, you just kind of spelled that wrong. I don't think that that's too much to ask of my compiler. And the features here are intended to help diagnose the occasional mistake that a real programmer would make in the course of a day trying to do a turnaround, and just save you time in tracking it down. And there's a reason this is important, but let's look at this.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Can we,
Oops, not likely.
Not like them. Well, hold on. Maybe I can. That's not text. That's actually a snapshot off my terminal that I took on the train over here. I did that so it would look all nice and cool, but apparently. Well, I can read it. I'm colorblind. Why can't you read it?
We're not colorblind.
Ah.
Well, can we make a brand name?
Yeah, I think we're going to be some public line, but...
Okay, I think that's good. Contrast a bit too. Is that good?
You don't watch
that. Yeah,
yeah,
all right. So.
Hold on.
Okay, can you see what color that is?
No.
All right. Well, I'll tell you. It's red. I'm looking at it on the screen. Well, I'll get to that. All right, I'll get to that. You never use LS minus capital G?
Oh, heaven forbid.
Oh, God, I pity you then.
Heaven forbid.
I pity you then. You don't believe in out of band data?
Oh.
Huh? I think I can make a rant on that.
Don't worry about it. It's not that important.
You know, there was a minus F flag to LS long before the minus G flag.
Yes, I have LS aliased in my C shell login scripts to LS minus capital F capital G, so I get both. Okay, so I wrote one C program that basically tried to fopen file.txt, and I didn't declare the variable file as a file star. Okay, it was just one line without declaration. In GCC, you're probably used to by now, it'll say file undeclared, this is the first use in the function, we won't tell you if we see it ever again, so we'll try to shut up about it, but they don't show you what the line of code looks like, and they don't give you any context for it. But they do helpfully at least give you a line number, and modern GCCs are starting to give you a column number too if it's a parser. Clang gives you a line number and a column number, and it says in nice big bold text, this is bold, this is not, you probably can't see it from there, but it uses the terminal bold if it detects it's on TTY, and with red lettering, hey, this is an error, you used an undeclared identifier file, and it shows me the line of code, which is quite handy when you're looking at your compiler output, not necessarily from like a colon made in VI or Vim with Cope or whatever the equivalent is in your favorite development environment, but you're looking at the output of your build scripts for the whole project. And if you pick up those control characters, they kind of scream out at you, or as you're watching the build go by, you'll see it, and you might hit your control brake fast enough and say, what happened, and look at your scroll back buffer.
But my VT220 is amber.
You're still using your VT220? Do you want some extra parts for it? I think I have a spare VT52 that has compatible parts, so I'll be happy to get it out of my basement. So, yes, sir.
Does providing such transparency encourage people like some of us SAs to try to start fixing things periodically? How is this? That's pretty radical.
Okay, so you actually believe in obfuscation then, in hiding information?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't believe in that. I'm just saying that
It's an interesting sociological question, and I don't know, and that's always the hesitancy with putting these kinds of features in, but I would say, you know, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Other people are putting these features in, and they are useful. I can say, honestly, they have helped save me a lot of time. I'm giving you the tip of the iceberg here right now, and if you want, later on, I'll go into some really, really hardcore in-depth ones with some of the weird parse constructs you can get in C++ and GCC's error messages, they might as well just spit out from dev random because you can't parse them. Yes?
Well, also having these dirty dead meter error messages, like when I think that somebody from a developer, can I just
like
shame them with like cut and paste and
CC style?
Like,
you probably could, and I'll tell you something.
Please give it to me. I don't have to fix it, I have to fix him.
I would agree, and I'll tell you something, maybe it's going to sound a bit elitist.
It's usually best done with a sharp knife.
This may sound a bit elitist, but I would say if your programmer's trying to give you a snow job and just say, hey, you don't need to know this stuff, and he's not being very transparent, it's the developer not being transparent and hiding behind all this TLA and abbreviation and such, I think the developer is trying to con you. I don't think a developer should be trying to do that.
I've never seen that.
Well, you must be very lucky.
He doesn't wear his glasses.
He's built.
Did you have a question over there, sir? I know you had your hand raised patiently. Or maybe you didn't. At least watching the laptop screen. All right. Did you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay. So, as I said, it was color, and you know, it's not the 1980s. I know some of us still want to use our VT220s, and you're welcome to it, and the client will just say, hey, you don't have color, I won't send those CSI codes in, and we'll just not do anything.
We'll look happy when we are done.
Yes, exactly.
We have a color. We have one.
Yes. I can at least see 8 colors, and I'm proud of that, so I want to use them all to the best that I can. I can't see mauve, and I can't see taupe, and some of those others that I can't even spell, but I've heard they exist. So, and the least the compiler can do for you, I think, is to render the messages with more out-of-band context help. I think the out-of-band use of color is not a bad thing. I think you might have seen my terminal prompt is fairly colorful for someone who doesn't really see too many colors, but I find it useful because, at least with having a color prompt for me, if you get this big wash of white text on the screen and you don't know where your prompt is, you don't know when you type the command, I can at least say, oh, there was a command line, there was a command line, there was a command line, which I find nice to have anchoring points. Some of us like to use syntax highlighting with color in our editors, and if you don't have that capacity or you don't want to use it, that's fine. I hope you're as productive as I am. GCC doesn't print any context, as we know. It doesn't even give us the offending line of code, so when we get back from our nightly builds from a nightly build job, we don't know what failed, and we have to go to look at the code. I mean, it's kind of strange because 35 years ago, 45 years ago, when you sent your deck of cards off to the lab to have your Fortran code compiled, you get back a listing printed. Now the compiler doesn't even have the capacity to give you a small excerpt of what went wrong, and I think that's kind of shameful. But let's try to fix it. So what I did next is I said, okay, let's put in files, but I didn't put the star, I just said file, and C. So normally it would be, for those of us who write C, you would expect file, star, file, but I didn't do that, I just said file. This is GCC's error message. Error, incompatible types in assignment. Well, it's not wrong, and it's informative, but
you can tell to what line.
Yeah, it didn't tell me what line, that's pretty nice. I mean, I remember using an old Microsoft compiler on a DOS system, and it would just say, I had an error number 4407, and you'd have to go to the manual and look it up. And if you were lucky, it would give you a line number with that error message. Otherwise, you just had to guess. And that was quite obnoxious. But Klein, I think, went a bit further here, and I got to commend it for the effort. You know, we got the bolding and stuff we talked about, and it said, assigning to type file, and it tells you what it was typed that from an incompatible type file star, which is pretty damn useful because now we know what the types are on both sides and everything else. And it also tells us a number of errors generated for that file, which GCC doesn't seem to do. That's sometimes useful. And so do we really need that much help? And we've been kind of batting this around with questions from the audience impromptu, but I would say, yeah, we really do. In this day and age, it's actually expected that part of being an expert in C, and especially in C++, is to be highly skilled in reading the cryptic messages that your compiler puts out. If you've ever tried to work with the STL, the Standard Template Library in C++, and you get one thing wrong, you get this big barf on your screen, and you've got to sit there, or you've got to run it through STL pretty printers and stuff. Yes, sir?
It's the first time I've seen all of what you said in the presentation.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Well, I won't brag, but I have an 800 on my GRE verbal, so. But yes, you have this, as you mentioned, compiler OFL, which is just the garbage rendition of whatever the compiler had when it died. And this is unfortunately a problem because I remember working with a competent developer who I knew from Stony Brook. And the biggest obstacle to him switching from Java to C++ was not some of the new concepts that C++ had or anything else. It was figuring out what the heck went wrong when the compiler barked at him. I mean, he was practically on the verge of crying, I think. And it's pretty scary, some of those messages you get back. If you haven't worked with C++, some people would say you're lucky that you haven't seen the error messages, and I'm inclined to agree. But you're unlucky because you're not getting certain benefits of it. But that's a whole separate issue. If you're working with C++, you know what I'm talking about. Most extant parsers aren't written with lexical context in mind, and that's the problem. GCC doesn't carry along the parse tree through as it gets there, and sometimes some of the error detection is long after the optimizations have happened, actually, and it's kind of strange that it does that, but that's how it works. And so it'll get very confused very easily, and it'll become quite cranky. I mean, some of us, I'm sure, have seen that baffling error message from GCC that says something like, expected ASM or extern over here. And it's like, what the heck is that all about? You gotta go, and it was usually you forgot a semicolon 40 lines up, and if you were lucky it was in the same file, or maybe it was in a header that you included and forgot to put the semicolon on a struct or a class that you wrote. So you don't even know what file it happened in, and then you go look at your your output from the preprocessor and get drowning in that for a while. And that just wastes time. And time is money in the industry. And actually in open source world too, time is people who use your stuff. If you're slower to the market in open source with producing your stuff, then fewer people use your stuff, and fewer people pay you to have a day job working on what you like. So I don't see any downside to getting rid of bad error messages. And the problem also, and this is I think the biggest problem, skilled programmers wind up becoming skilled in both their language and their compiler's output language of errors, messages, and the other debris that comes out. And that's not a good thing, because it means, well, okay, you're experienced with dealing with GCC's error message output, but you've never seen Microsoft Visual C++'s error message output. And the first three of them you'll see, you're going to run for the hills because you don't know what kind of barks it gives back when. And this is just something you pick up from making those mistakes. And this causes a problem for large software teams, because if you want to move the team to a new compiler, that can be an especially daunting task, because they basically almost have to learn a new programming language, but not really. They're still writing the same language, but they have to learn a new language for their mistakes. And this is essentially more wasted time and effort. So, Clang has a lot of neat recovery features. And if you want, I'll put on the demo, it's getting a bit later, and we'll see some of them in that demo. It has a spell checker. Yeah, it has a spell checker. It sounds insane when you first think about it. Why would you put a spell checker in a compiler? But it can save you a hell of a lot of time. And it's really interesting the way they apply it. Now, that's not to say that they actually correct your code, but they make a suggestion in the error messages, which winds up being very useful. They have type name disambiguation by context inference, which basically means if they think you're using something as a type name or not, and there are cases in both C and C++ where it can be ambiguous. For instance, if I have open paren x, close paren, open paren y, close paren, just that expression could have at least four different parses I could think of in C, and probably a good another half dozen or so in C++. And it uses the context information to help give better error messaging rather than just, this type does not support that operation, and it gives you some bars. It will give you a suggestion of your expected intent based upon certain common errors. As I said, some of the warnings that we got back from compiling the FreeBSD tree were things like, if you have an assignment and an if statement, you generally want to put parentheses around certain parts of it to help avoid nasty side effects and help avoid, you know, order evaluation, and also just to say this is really what you mean. And that convention has become so much ironclad that compilers actually check for it. It will actually give you pretty useful errors when you miss a semicolon. If you forget to put a semicolon, which is probably one of the most common mistakes in a C-like language, it's not going to say, well, I can't tell what type this is. Well, actually, it says, I think you forgot a semicolon. And it prints out your line and says, you should probably put a semicolon here. And then you bring it up in your editor and say, oh, yeah, I should have. Which saves you however much time it was hunting down and saying, no, it looked right, because it at least gives you a hint, hey, look at the end of the line, buddy. It actually does operator typo detection and suggestion from the context. For instance, if you've worked with pointers to a struct versus a raw struct in C, you've got the dot versus the arrow operator. And if you mix them up, it will say, hey, you were using a pointer here, and I see a dot. I think you might want to flip that. And it just tells you that. It doesn't say, oh, I can't parse this. It just tells you a very simple error message, which is really, really useful. And there's a few more that we'll also get to in the demo if we can. But this was also a talk about Clang on FreeBSD. So Clang on FreeBSD is part of a larger effort to get away from the GPL in FreeBSD. And what's left in FreeBSD is GPL in our tool chain, at least. Binutils, the assembler, link editor, and tending tools for managing binary objects. They're being replaced by LLVM, but some of the tools actually have to be rewritten. Turns out that M. Warner Losh is working on some bits that he volunteered he might be able to submit back. He mentioned this at a recent Dev Summit. And this may replace the last of our dependencies here. The C++ standard library, which is for runtime and compile time, things like IOStream, things like the STL template headers and stuff, For the most part, we've been using libstandard C++, which is a GNU GPL implementation. Same licensing issues. In fact, sometimes a little worse because STL is template code, which means they have to give it to you as source code, and it enables you to do a source code, and that whole binary source code boundary gets a lot blurrier. Clang developers have been working on a replacement called libc++. It's a drop-in for the GNU package, and it will be C++OS compliant. It mostly works on Linux, it mostly works on Darwin-based systems. It's got some interesting parse quirks on previous D systems with GCC, and it's getting better. It looks like maybe by the end of this year or next year, it will start to find its way into the tree. And lib support C++, the C++ runtime support library, which is probably one of the nastiest parts of dealing with C++ and getting it to work anywhere. And I was pretty crazy. I decided to write a partial port of the GNU lib support C++ to the FreeBSD kernel. And I was successful with it, and I got interested in it, and so I've been starting to research alternatives to the GNU one for my own purposes. And I was informed by Brooks Davies at a dev summit that Pascal had released a BSD license-friendly C++ runtime library. And so I started messing with that, and if I get enough traction and no one else is doing it, I might actually submit that to the tree, and that would take care of that bit. These are the only ones that seem to be left. And then FreeBSD is liberated from the GPL issues that hamper it. So I think that's the last slide here before the break. Yeah. So I guess I'll give everyone a little break so I can drink some water and get set up for demos of some of those interesting features, because we've been going for about an hour now. But I'll take some questions before then if there are any. Hi.
So this is kind of that social question formal. Technical. How much of other languages and their error output, Python, Ruby, all the fun.
How much of them are affected by LLVM?
Yeah, because it seems like there's a lot.
That's a good question. That's a good question. Most of the back ends, most of the front ends that are using LLVM in the back end would be able to get back that parse information from LLVM and whatever they gave to LLVM. I would probably say, not knowing enough about it in the specifics, that in the general, it's going to be dependent upon the implementation of the front end that they use. Some are just ports of front ends from bin utils to LLVM, in which case you're going to be stuck with whatever legacy attitude they had, but there are some complete new rewrites, and those rewrites probably, if they're done responsibly, would propagate that up. So the answer would be, it kind of depends on the implementation, but I would hope that there's movement towards better message output. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Other questions? Do you have another one?
Yeah, I do.
All right.
ProPolice and other types of stack smashing extensions.
Yeah.
State of using that, of integrating those types of tools and ideas into this compiler.
That I haven't really looked into. I know ProPolice was a GCC extension, but I think it was somewhat portable. I know OpenBSD uses it heavily.
The GCC guys actually were working.
We're working on it.
And
yeah.
Some other people were starting their own new things that were.
I don't know the status of that. I haven't really taken too much interest in runtime error detection. I've been mostly focused on like the language theory end of it, static analysis, and that kind of stuff. But there is a place for the runtime error detection too, and isolation. I don't know its status. I'd really have to look it up for you. I would hope that it's not too difficult to inject, because mostly the way ProPolice works is it just kind of says, okay, let's put these canaries over here, and let's just kind of modify, without affecting the ABI, some of our stack layout, and maybe make a request to block out certain pages. So I would imagine it should be too hard to just hook in and say, well, this is really an optimization, and you do this. So I don't foresee any significant difficulties to putting it in the chain, but I don't really work on compilers, so I couldn't answer it more than that. Does anyone else have a question? Yes, sir.
You mentioned on this time
for
code.
Yes.
How do you measure?
I'm not the one who's measured that. Most of this has been from reading reports around, you know, the web on that. I do recall that using Clang to do the whole make build world for FreeBSD is significantly slower, and there were some statistics posted on that. It was a measurable difference, at least for, you know, getting one compiler or the other to chew on the whole code base of the FreeBSD project. That's the kernel, the user land utilities, and both compilers, and that kind of stuff.
You sort of compare the features of GCC and Clang.
Come again?
You're comparing features. So
yes, I was.
GCC and Clang.
Still going to put that back up?
Do you have
similar comparison
to the Delta
compiler? It's not open source. I've used it at some companies, and my experience with it is it's mostly just felt like a slightly alien GCC, at least from my perspective, but I didn't really get to play with it too much. I'm not aware of all of their features. I do know they have a very good optimized architecture because, well, they know it better than anyone, but I don't really know the status of those features now. Yeah. Anyone else? Smoke break? Did I hear?
Yeah.
Okay, then everyone, take five, smoke it if you got them, and we'll see you when you come back.
Thank you.